This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Economists and traders expect that the Federal Reserve will cut interest rates this week for the first time since the 2008 financial crisis. Now, it's easy to notice that unemployment is at a 50-year low and to notice that mortgage rates are down. What the Fed does can be harder to connect with your day-to-day life, but it matters in ways that can be hard to see but easy to feel. Economists are debating whether lowering interest rates will delay or hasten a recession. Why would the Fed lower the cost of borrowing now? How does that actually work? And what might it mean for you? Joining us here in studio is Gina Smilek, who covers the Federal Reserve and the economy for the New York Times. Gina, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us in studio is Mark Goldwein, Senior Vice President and Senior Policy Director for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. That's a nonpartisan think tank focused on fiscal policy. Mark, welcome.
Glad to be here.
We also welcome your questions and thoughts about the Federal Reserve, the interest rates, what changing them might mean for you, or if there's anything in particular that you are concerned about with regards to the interest rates. Is there something that you have hopes for, either in the rates going up, going down, remaining the same? Email us, 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Gina, let's start with just some basic information. The Federal Reserve is kind of necessarily opaque in a way. If you've ever heard a statement from the chairman, it's one of those things that you kind of need, you know, translated. So let's just start from the beginning. What is the Federal Reserve?
Right. So the Federal Reserve is America's central bank. And essentially what they are tasked with is just keeping the economy operating at an even keel. And so the idea is they raise and lower interest rates as a way of achieving their two primary goals, which are maximum employment and stable inflation. They define stable inflation as just roughly around 2%. So enough to guard against harmful deflation, which can make it harder for the economy to keep growing because people hoard cash, and not so much that it really hurts consumers.
Now, we call the Federal Reserve a bank. It's not the kind of bank that's like a repository for the nation's money. That's more like the Treasury, right?
Right. So the Federal Reserve is what you might think of as sort of a bank's bank. And so what they do is they have these relationships with all of the different banks in the country. They help to oversee them. They manage sort of interbank markets, so the money that is held between banks overnight. And what they really do is they set interest rates, and by setting one of those interbank rates. And by setting interest rates, they kind of affect how much money supply there is in the economy. They affect how quick the economy can expand or how much it's going to slow down. Basically, they just kind of nudge around the edges to make sure that things don't get too hot during good times. And when the economy slows down, they come to the rescue.
And when you say interbank rates, you're talking about the rate that banks kind of lend money to one another?
Overnight. Yep, exactly. And so that has historically been the Fed's primary tool, although things are changing a little bit in a pretty wonky way right now. But I think the key message is that the way they affect the economy is really via interest rates and money supply. They also, during the crisis, your listeners might be aware, did quite a unconventional policy that has now become more usual for central banks to do, which is that they bought and held Treasury securities and agency-backed, mortgage-backed securities. And the idea behind that was just to give the economy a little bit of extra boost, because what they've traditionally done is really affected short-term interest rates, and they wanted to hit interest rates across what economists call the curve, so sort of into longer durations.
Mark Goldwein, this interest rate, what exactly are we talking about when we say the Fed will cut this interest rate? What is this rate?
Sure. So the Federal Reserve has sort of two rates that it is focused on, right? It's overnight rate, but also the rate that it actually pays on reserves. But the key is that when the Federal Reserve adjusts interest rates, it actually can trickle throughout the entire economy. So if the Federal Reserve cuts by a quarter, that might mean a quarter cut in mortgage rates, a similar size cut in credit card rates, car loans, business loans. Even the amount of money that you get on your bank deposits.
So it has this ripple effect, but in a direct sense, if the Federal Reserve says we're going to cut this interest rate by a quarter of a percentage point, what is that actually directly cutting the interest rate on?
Right. So the two major things that they're doing is they are a depository for other banks, and so they actually pay an interest rate on the cash that they are holding for those banks. That's the key one that they're playing with right now. But at the same time, they're also cutting the the rate with which they're lending to other banks, especially overnight.
What does it mean when a rate goes up or goes down, typically speaking?
Yeah, so when the Federal Reserve raises rates, and so therefore loans are more expensive and savings is more valuable, what we'd expect to see is people saving more and borrowing less, right? And during inflationary times, that can be helpful because it can stop the economy from overheating. When the Fed cuts rates, we'd expect the reverse. We expect that people will borrow more and save less and thus spend more throughout the economy.
So I just want to make sure we're clear, Mark. If the Federal Reserve raises rates, then, you know, the people who give out home mortgages or car loans might raise their rates too. What's their rationale for following the Federal Reserve? Why not go in the opposite direction?
Well, remember, the Federal Reserve is the bank's bank, right? And so the entire financial system is linked, and there's only limited arbitrage opportunities. So if the Federal Reserve is offering a more generous rate and other banks are cutting, there's not going to be any room for them to make money or them to have profit.
I'm sorry, arbitrage?
Yeah, thanks. So there always are differences throughout the economy in various prices and signals. And when you see a major difference, there's sort of profit opportunities where you can close that gap through trades. That only works to a limited degree, and it can't really work if you're moving in the opposite direction of the major bank of the country.
We're speaking to Mark Goldwein of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget and Gina Smilek of the New York Times. We welcome your questions and thoughts as well, 1A@WAMU.org. Gina, who runs the Federal Reserve? Who's in charge?
So the Federal Reserve is actually an independent body, and so it's a little bit of a complicated system. So I'll just walk you through sort of the basics. But essentially, there is a Board of Governors in Washington, and there are seven members on the Board of Governors, although they aren't all full right now. But the President of the United States gets to nominate those governors, and then Congress confirms them. Once they've gotten those jobs, they can only be removed for cause, which basically means malfeasance. They can only be removed if they actually do something wrong. So those guys sit in Washington, and they're sort of, you know, the stalwarts of the committee is a good way to think of them. They have a constant vote on monetary policy, and from the governors, you get your vice chair and your chairman, who is the most important member and probably the most recognizable member of the Fed. Currently, that's Jay Powell. Then you've got 12 members who sit around the table at every interest rate decision but don't get to vote on every one. Those guys are presidents from the regional banks, and they are actually selected by representatives at the regional bank.
So these are like if we see Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis or Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, that's the 12.
Precisely. Exactly. And four of those guys get to vote at any given time. They cycle in and out on a rotating basis. And so you've got this combination of the governors in Washington and the regional banks who set policy at every meeting, but everybody is present in the discussion. And if you talk to folks who actually sit on the committee, they often will tell you that it doesn't really matter who has a vote at any given meeting. What really matters is that everyone is there and contributing. Although I have to add that people do dissent against decisions once in a while, though they will occasionally vote no. And at those moments, it can matter who is voting.
So you've got these seven main members at the top. You've got four rotating in and out. So 11 people kind of voting at any given time. So there's kind of a way to break ties. What is the thought process behind, say, cutting interest rates? I mean, the last time the Fed cut interest rates was in 2008 during the recession. If they cut interest rates now, and again, this is what many are expecting, but the Fed has not announced this yet. So just to be clear, we're just going on what analysts are suggesting. What might some of the rationale be for cutting interest rates now?
Precautionary. This is entirely a precautionary move. And so what people may be aware of is that the economy is actually doing decently well right now. You know, growth has looked pretty solid. Consumer spending is still strong. A lot of different metrics of labor market strength are really in the green. I think what the Fed is most focused on, though, is that there are a lot of uncertainties on the outlook. Those include the tariffs that the Trump administration has put in effect. Those seem to be denting business confidence. And then also a big global slowdown. We're seeing manufacturers around the world really pull back, and the Fed wants to get ahead of those concerns.
That's some of what the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell mentioned in testimony before Congress this month. He explained why the Fed might cut interest rates. Here is part of what Chairman Powell said.
At our January, March, and May meetings, we stated that we would be patient as we determined what future adjustments to the federal funds rate might be appropriate to support our goals of maximum employment and price stability. Since then, based on incoming data and other developments, it appears that uncertainties around trade tensions and concerns about the strength of the global economy continue to weigh on the U.S. economic outlook.
That's Fed Chairman Jerome Powell speaking before Congress earlier this month. Mark?
Yes, I think an important piece there is the Fed's dual mandate, right? So they can afford to be precautionary because right now they're doing excellent on their goal of stable prices. In fact, they haven't even been able to hit their inflation target of 2%. So that's really what allows the Fed the wiggle room to feel like they can be precautionary in order to combat a potential recession.
Quick question before we pause. Mick commented on our Facebook page, this is an atrocious monetary policy. The interest rate should be triple what it is now. If we cut now, what are we going to do when the bubble bursts? Gina, what is this concern in terms of what the interest rate should be? Triple what it is now?
So he's right in that historically, interest rates have been much higher than they are right now. Back in 2007, when we started cutting, rates were at 5.25%. They're currently at 2.25 to 2.5%. So they are much lower. But that is because the economy has changed fundamentally in that period. What we've seen is a much lower run rate of growth, really different demographics, and slower productivity. And between all of those factors, rates have just come down a lot. The rate that the economy can sustain while still growing, much lower than it was in the past.
Much more to discuss as we continue our conversation with Gina Smilek of the New York Times and Mark Goldwein of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Later on, we'll add two more guests to talk about what this might mean for your finances directly, and we'll get to some more of your questions and stories as well. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing the Fed and that pesky interest rate that everyone seems to be interested in. It is supposed that the Fed is going to drop that interest rate by a quarter of a percentage point. If it does, what difference does that make for you? What does dropping that even mean? And what might it mean for your finances specifically? We're discussing it with Gina Smilek, who covers the Federal Reserve for the New York Times, and Mark Goldwein, Senior VP and Senior Policy Director for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. We'd love to hear from you. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A or email 1A at WAMU.org. Mark, before we move too far forward, that clip we played from Chairman Jerome Powell of the Federal Reserve, he mentioned trade tensions and the strength of the global economy. Could you expand a little bit more on the link between interest rates in the U.S. and the economy around the world? What's the connection?
Right. So the link actually works in the other direction, which is what the Federal Reserve is trying to do is keep the United States economy stable. But the United States economy isn't an island, right? We trade with other countries. We have financial flows with other countries. And so if the rest of the globe is weak, that could come back and make the U.S. weak. And that's exactly what the Federal Reserve is trying to prevent.
So how does the interest rate help insulate us from that?
It doesn't insulate us per se, but what a lower interest rate does is it can help to keep spending and go borrowing and even investing moving at a time that people might otherwise be more precautionary and want to save their money in case of sort of global turmoil.
So it makes the U.S. look like a good place to do business, even though the rest of the world might be kind of shaky.
There's a bit of that. There's a bit of that through exchange rates. But the bigger effect is really just that it gets Americans to continue to spend in America and not to be as affected by what's going on around the world.
Gina, you mentioned that one of the goals of the Fed has to do with the job market and employment. Talk about what that goal actually means when we say things like full employment. I mean, what exactly is the Fed aiming for? Or is that kind of a moving target?
Yeah, so this is a fun question at this specific moment because it has just changed dramatically over the last year. So historically, the Fed thought that under a certain level of unemployment, wages would start rising and that would lead companies to eventually lift prices. And so the idea was a low enough unemployment rate would eventually drive higher inflation. And so the Fed really used to understand full employment as sort of this trade-off, this Goldilocks level at which rates or the unemployment rate wasn't so low that it pushed inflation way too high. But this time around, unemployment has fallen really, really low to basically its lowest level in 50 years, and inflation is kind of nowhere to be found. And so the takeaway from this is that full employment, maximum employment, as the Fed previously understood it, doesn't seem to be playing out anymore. And so now maximum employment has become much more of a moving target and something that they're allowed to sort of play around with in a way that I don't think we previously saw.
Well, you have more employment, but middle class wages haven't really moved. So the prospect of people being able to spend more, I don't know what the interest rate can do to influence that. That's kind of businesses deciding what they want to pay people.
So the idea is that by setting interest rates at a level that's permissive of growth, so something that encourages investment from businesses and from households, you're going to allow for the economy as a whole to grow a little bit faster. That's going to lead to more hiring. And as the unemployment rate drops steadily lower, that'll push wages up. It's worth noting that wages have increased a little bit. They just haven't sort of galloped away the way you would expect late in a cycle. And so the Fed is really sort of waiting for that shoe to drop, I think.
Mark, I'd like to get your reaction to another clip from Jerome Powell. He held a press conference in May to talk about something that you mentioned earlier, Gina, which was concern about low inflation, which, as you said, has yet to reach that kind of 2% target that was adopted back in 2012. Here's part of what Chairman Powell said back in May.
We say in our statement of longer-run goals and monetary policy strategy that the committee would be concerned if inflation were running persistently above or below 2%. If we did see a persistent inflation running persistently below, then that is something the committee would be concerned about and something that we would take into account in setting policy.
That was Chairman Powell speaking back in May. Mark, why would he be concerned about inflation being too low, and what kind of policy would be the reaction to that?
Sure. So if inflation is literally zero or negative, you can have really bad implications to the economy. But when he says, when Chairman Powell says he's concerned about low inflation, it's not the low inflation per se, you know, at 1.5%. It's the fact that it's a signal that the Fed basically could be doing more to boost employment. Because as Gina mentioned, we would expect to see higher inflation if we were at maximum employment. And so it's more a signal of the Federal Reserve not doing everything it can be doing on the employment side than the danger of inflation itself.
Isn't low inflation a good thing? Does that mean that I don't have to pay that much more for milk or eggs or gas or furniture or a house or a car?
Absolutely. That's why I said within reason, it's not the low inflation itself that's the danger. It's what the low inflation tells us about the employment side of the equation.
Gina?
It also is, I'm going to push back a little bit. So it's also just a little bit the low inflation itself in the sense that the Fed is really worried about becoming Japan. And so what we've seen happen in Japan is that inflation sunk a little bit low and it stayed a little bit low for a really long time. Businesses and consumers started consistently expecting lower inflation. And now the Bank of Japan just cannot get inflation back up. And that ends up being sort of this disinflationary spiral where it keeps getting lower and lower and you get stuck in the mud and the Fed does not want to get into that kind of a position.
Oh, by the way, Gina, you mentioned the Bank of Japan. Does every nation have an equivalent of the Federal Reserve with the same kinds of levers to pull?
So most developed nations do. It's worth noting that some countries have a slightly different system. So China is a good one that I think people are probably very aware of right now because President Trump talks about them a lot. But in China, for example, the central bank is much more closely integrated with the overall government. And so they don't have this sort of operational independence that the Fed enjoys, which most research suggests over time leads to worse outcomes because it leads to more short-term thinking.
Mark?
And also remember, some countries actually share central banks. So for example, the entire EU essentially shares, or most everyone under the euro shares a single central bank.
Central Bank.
Exactly. And I also want to agree with that point. I think there is this risk of low inflation in the Japan case. And a piece of it is that the lower inflation is, actually the less room the Federal Reserve has to cut interest rates, because the Federal Reserve cuts interest rates based on the nominal interest rate. So if inflation is running only 1%, that means that they only have very little to cut between their real interest rate and zero.
Let's get to some of your questions. Linda wrote on our Facebook page, "My credit card interest isn't going in that direction. I'm a great investor. Where's the trickle down from any of this?" Gina?
So credit cards are a funny one because they don't always, if you chart them against the Fed funds rate, they don't always chart that directly. Because there are a lot of other things that affect credit card rates. I think if you want to see where the Fed's rates are having a direct effect, you can look pretty closely at mortgages. So mortgages have really moved down this year, just on the very fact that the Fed is so clearly signaling that it's going to cut rates. So just the idea that this is coming has made buying a house a little bit cheaper.
Barbara tweeted, "My concern with the Fed lowering rates as much as they have is where will they go if a recession hits? 0%. It's the lack of keeping a safety net that worries me." Mark, what about that? The concern about where it goes if there is a recession?
I think this is a very valid concern. When we entered the Great Recession, we had, I forget, interest rates 5.5% or something like that. And by the way, on the fiscal side, we had very low debt to GDP. And so we were able to cut rates a lot and we were able to borrow a lot on the fiscal side. If we hit a recession this time, we won't have as much room on either. And I think it's a very valid concern. I've heard keeping interest rates high sort of akin to training at high altitudes, right? You make yourself a little bit worse in the training process, but you're much better prepared for the real game. And I think there's something to that.
Gina?
The Fed would probably disagree wholeheartedly to what Mark just said. So their research finds, and they seem to genuinely believe, that when you are in a situation where you have very low interest rates, what makes the most sense is to get moving early and sort of try and inoculate the economy against a downturn, because that leads to lower unemployment spikes during the recession and makes a recession easier to climb out of. And so this idea is, counterintuitively, when interest rates are low, it just ups the ante on getting moving early if you see any signs of trouble.
So the Fed would argue, Gina, that the best way, at least at this point, to deal with a potential recession would not be to have the interest rates higher before the recession. It's to keep the interest rates lower before the recession with enough room to go yet lower if necessary.
So basically the idea is, if you tried to put interest rates higher just to give yourself more ammunition come the recession, you would risk creating the recession. So if we had interest rates at 5.25% today, it's quite likely that the economy would not be able to handle that. So the economic growth would slow, you know, things would look pretty bad.
And borrowing would get more expensive. People would freak out.
Yeah. Precisely. And we could actually create a recession. This is what the Fed, I think, would tell you. The idea is, we're stuck in a world where we can't have especially high interest rates. In that universe, it makes more sense to be precautionary rather than trying to save up your ammunition for the downturn.
Do we have any good examples, Mark or Gina, of where the Fed just got it wrong, where they thought that they were moving in the right direction and then the economy just got smacked as a direct result of that decision? Can we point to when the Fed has done it wrong?
Yes. Yeah, I think we can definitely do that. So I think there have been several instances throughout the course of Fed history where they have been blamed, rightly or wrongly, for precipitating a recession. People will often point to the 2007 to 2009 cycle, actually, both in the sense that they left rates low too long, then they took them up too quickly just before the recession. That's one idea. Also, I think people will look at the early 2000s recession as sort of a similar example. It's hard to know these things for sure, though, just because you don't have the counterfactual and you don't know what would have happened if the Fed hadn't been around.
Mark, I'll also add, I think some people are arguing now, including the President of the United States, that the Fed has been getting it wrong, that they raised rates too much over the last 2.5 years.
One listener tweeted, "Interest rates really only affect the ability of large businesses to borrow money. Lending is not a problem for businesses right now, though. Is this just going to wind up with the Fed shooting their shot way before it can have a useful anti-recessionary effect?" Too soon, Jenna? Or Gina?
That's actually, I think, a really interesting point and a real concern, is this idea that, you know, moving down a little bit right now might not matter that much because the economy is already chugging along pretty nicely, credit conditions look okay, et cetera, et cetera. I think the arguments against that would be that before the Fed signaled back in June that they were going to cut interest rates, financial conditions were tightening. So it did look like we might be headed down a road where it was possible it was going to get a lot harder to borrow and lend. And so if what they're doing now is really sort of following through on that promise they made a few months ago that did help to sort of avert a worse outcome, then you could see it as something that actually is good for credit creation.
I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A. Let's add a few more voices to the conversation alongside Gina Smilek and Mark Goldwine. Joining us now on the line is Neela Richardson, an investment strategist at Edward Jones, national real estate and former chief economist at Redfin Corporation. Neela, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Also with us is Tibor Besedesh, an associate professor of economics at Georgia Tech. Professor Besedesh, glad to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Neela, what's your sense of cutting interest rates while the economy is strong? We just got that tweet from a listener who said it might be too soon. Another comment from a listener who was concerned that we don't have enough room to lower rates if a recession really hit. What's your take on it right now?
Well, I think the economic context is really important to keep in mind. You know, we are in the longest expansion in U.S. history, first and foremost. And the hidden superpower of the economy right now is its very slow, plodding pace of growth. It's been able to achieve this 10-year expansion mainly because it hasn't grown very quickly, and inflation for that reason has been subdued. When we look at the biggest risk of a recession, time and time again, it's been the Fed itself. Expansions don't die of old age, we always say. They're actually slowed, killed, choked by the Federal Reserve when they raise interest rates too high in order to keep inflation tame. That slows growth and eventually leads to recession. What we're seeing now is an economy that can chug along mainly because inflation is so low.
Killed by the Federal Reserve, Neela. That's pretty vivid.
And historically accurate. So important to keep in mind. So we're really in this interesting place for Fed policy. The mandates on the face of it are achieved, except we have inflation lower than the 2% target. It's important to keep in mind that we have not reached that 2% target throughout the 10% expansion. And also, when you compare that to our inflation rate to rates around the world, you'll see that U.S. interest rates are much higher. And that's really what's keeping the long end of the curve, the 10-year yield, the yield in which mortgage rates are is priced off of, keeping it low. It's not just rates here at home, but it's rates around the world that are very, very low, that's keeping the longer end of that interest rate curve low and keeping borrowing costs inexpensive for consumers.
And Neela, could you just explain, when we say a 10-year yield, what mm-hmm. does that mean?
So when we look at different interest rates, they are based on the maturity of that interest rate, when that bond matures. There's very short-term rates, and that's really the Fed's wheelhouse. They affect short-term interest rates, think your savings rate, your CD, your credit card. And then there's longer-term rates associated with different parts of what we call the yield curve, which is interest rates at different maturities. Those longer rates include auto loans, mortgage rates, rates that consumers are really know a lot about when they make bigger purchases. And the real critical part of the Fed's policy right now is they're very good at controlling that short end of the yield curve, mm-hmm. not so good at the long end, because that long end is determined by a lot of other factors, including global rates abroad.
Professor Beshadesh, we want to talk more about this in our next segment, but what is your sense of how people might most likely respond to these cuts? You focus on behavioral economics. What kind of behaviors might we expect?
Well, you might get that people will borrow more and spend more, just because with lower interest rates across the board, money becomes cheaper. So it becomes easier to get a hold of it, it becomes easier to borrow, and you have to pay less in interest when you pay it back.
So borrowing more, spending more, does that mean that, say, if there is a recession and the Fed needs to lower interest rates further, that the people who borrowed more and spent more will be in more trouble as a result?
Well, it then depends on what kind of loan you have. If you have a fixed interest rate loan, then lower rates in the future don't really do a whole lot for you. If you have variable interest rate loans, then lower interest rates in the future will make it easier to pay them back.
Let me get to a few of your comments before we pause. Paul tweeted, "Full employment has not led to large increases in wages because of union busting and regressive tax policies. Slow wage gains are part of the overall problem, not a coincidental counter-theoretical anomaly." And Marion tweeted, "We have a new employment landscape. Many jobs being created are low-pay jobs, and we need cheap products from China, India, etc. The tariff fight is not helping the economy." We'll talk more about some of those external factors when we continue, but first, we should say thank you to Gina Smilek, who covers the Federal Reserve for the New York Times. Gina, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Mark Goldwine, Senior VP and Senior Policy Director for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
So we want to get more into the impact on your life, your economics, and more of whether or not a monetary move like this would help you, whether it would backfire, and your specific questions about what the Fed's interest rate would mean for you or even just what it means. Stay close. Let's continue our conversation and get to more of your questions. We have said goodbye to Gina Smilek of the New York Times and Mark Goldwine of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. We're now joined by Neela Richardson, an investment strategist at Edward Jones and former chief economist at Redfin, and Tibor Beshadesh, who is an associate professor of economics at Georgia Tech. Neela, let me get your sense of the impact of a move like this on the economy. Is this the kind of thing, moving interest rates, the sort of thing that benefits the stock market, say, more than the overall economy? Our friend Kai Rizdahl from Marketplace is fond of saying the stock market is not the economy. So is this one of those situations?
Kai is perfectly accurate in that statement. In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. The effect on the stock market is more immediate. The effect on the economy is much longer in time. And so what we've seen is just the anticipation of a rate cut has led equity prices to soar in the first half of the year. They're up over 18.5% in the first half of the year, mainly because the markets are anticipating not only stronger fundamentals in terms of economic growth and earnings, but also this Fed stimulus into the economy that's boosted stocks. And so our concern is, what if the markets don't get exactly what they want from the Fed? Will that have an effect on the stock market? The Fed's cut on the economy, it's going to take much longer to play out over time.
Professor Beshadesh, I'd love to get your reaction to Marion's tweet. She wrote, "We have a new employment landscape. Many jobs being created are low-pay jobs, and we need cheap products from China, India, etc. The tariff fight is not helping the economy." Professor, what's your sense of how much trade tensions and kind of the international aspect of economics is affecting this move?
Well, my sense is that it's one of the more important pieces of it, because the sheer uncertainty of what will happen with tariffs with China, which is the biggest trading partner of the United States, and then the retaliation and lack of purchases of U.S. products, especially agriculturally. There's a lot of uncertainty in terms of what that's going to do and when that's going to get results. So this uncertainty, I think, is one of the chief driving forces behind the Fed's thinking of cutting rates and sort of getting ahead of the curve if things don't turn out well. And as you see this morning, the president again tweeted against China, sort of essentially almost indicating that the likelihood of a deal is lower.
This may be too reductive, Professor Beshadesh. Just tell me if it is, but is there a sense of, broadly speaking, how raising or lowering this interest rate connects with our perceptions of the economy behaviorally? Like, you know, if times are hard and people are nervous, lower the rates. If times are good and people are optimistic, you can raise the rate. Do we have a clear sense of just how perception affects interest rates?
Well, not really. I mean, the strongest connection you would have is if consumers were worried, consumer spending would go down and become significantly weaker. And that hasn't happened yet. And so, as has been sort of said before, we are in a bit of uncharted waters, because there does seem to have been a sort of systematic change in the nature of the economy, in that unemployment, sort of the rate of full employment has increase, so we can tolerate lower unemployment for longer periods of time without triggering inflation. So it's not clear to me exactly whether this sort of link between the perception of the interest rates and the rest of the economy has really changed in consumers' minds. But consumers' behavior so far hasn't changed in a way that would lead us to believe that they're worried about the economy.
Perhaps to that point, Katha tweeted, "We have had a decade of hurting savers to help debtors. The latest uncertainty because of trade seems like a self-inflicted injury." Neela, what about that? A self-inflicted injury, hurting savers to help debtors?
You know, that is always the trade-off when you're setting an interest rate policy. Who benefits? And the Fed's position right now is that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. If they can cut interest rates enough to prolong the expansion, that's good for everyone. That's good for borrowers because they have cheaper money. And it's good for savers because they get the benefits of a growing economy that leads to higher rates on their savings. But what's important to remember is that Fed policy is not a panacea. And the one place we're seeing weakness in the economy is business investment and manufacturing. And the question is, if our already historically low rates isn't prompting business investment, then will cutting it a little bit more generate the investment that we're all looking for that leads to higher wages and a pickup in inflation? And that's the something that the Fed is going to have to continue to confront as it looks at its policy beyond this week.
Professor, what's your sense of how much people are influenced in terms of external versus internal factors? I'm talking about the U.S. Are we influenced more, particularly consumers and small business people, more by what's going on around the world, more by the policies that the U.S. is setting to try to manage interest rates or improve employment? Like, when you get down to it behaviorally, what has the stronger pull?
I think in the U.S. it's the internal forces, sort of what's happening with the Fed's decision. So the interest rate was what the stock market is doing, because a lot of people are using that as sort of the benchmark of where things are going, much more so than the external force. I mean, I think the only time you get external forces to sort of really be present in people's mind is when you have trade wars or potential trade wars, when that's brought to the forefront, or when the rest of the world is really doing poorly economically.
This is a gross generalization, Professor, but do you think most people are really aware of the Fed, what it does, why it matters?
Probably not.
What is it about the Fed that you wish more people understood? I mean, it's not the sexiest part of the economy, granted. We tend to look at the stock market a little more.
No, I think it's the what's sort of being missed in a lot of sort of, I think, people's sort of notions about the Fed is really there to make sure the economy remains stable.
Joshua, if I could just jump in, sorry. I think when the Fed is doing its job properly, you shouldn't notice its presence, right? That's the whole point.
Professor, was there more that you wanted to add?
No, I'm just going to say that with the Fed's chief job being making sure the economy remains stable, it's if they're doing things well, we should not really hear about them.
Well, maybe... Maybe to that end, we should play a few clips from the president, but one from last Friday and one from this morning, because he's criticized the Fed's past rate hikes, claiming they acted too soon. He's long supported lowering interest rates. Here is part of what President Trump said last Friday.
With us, we have a Fed that does quantitative tightening and they raise interest rates. So we have a normalized rate. President Obama had no rates and he had no tightening. And we still have a much better economy than in his wildest dreams. And there is something okay about that, but the Fed acted too soon. I turned out to be right. They acted too soon and too violently. We've had 9 increases, a lot under Powell. I'm not a fan.
President Trump speaking last Friday. Neela, can you just explain what he means by quantitative tightening? What does that mean?
I wish I knew. But I think what's important to keep in mind is that when the economy is growing and solidly, interest rates rise, but they rise for the right reasons. They rise because of economic activity. And that's good for growth. And what the Fed is watchful of is that interest rates don't rise too much and prompt this upsurge in inflation. So it's a real balancing act. It's true the Fed doesn't always get it right, but you got to think of them as the Goldilocks of the economy. They're concerned that the economy is running too hot or too cold, and over time they want just the right pace for economic growth, and that's the pace that supports both borrowers and servers in this economy.
Professor Bishadish, before we play the second cut from President Trump, what did you make of that first statement, particularly whatever he means by quantitative tightening?
Well, I think what he was referring to is the fact that interest rates have been rising, which makes borrowing more expensive and less people can then borrow money and do what they need to do. But, you know, I think a lot of that reason why that was done is it was done at a time when there were fewer uncertainties. It was done at a time when there was no prospect of a trade war, any of these potentially external factors imposing potential difficulties for the U.S. economy. And you have to keep in mind the president was a real estate investor. He always likes lower interest rates.
Let me play now that clip from the president speaking this morning in front of a helicopter. So there's a fair amount of noise, but here is part of what the president said in a press gaggle this morning.
I would like to see a large cut, and I'd like to see immediately the quantitative tightening stop. It should be stopped. For them to have done quantitative tightening and also higher interest rates simultaneously, I think was a big mistake.
President Trump speaking this morning. Neela, what's the impact of the president opining on interest rates?
Well, hopefully there is no impact, because what's the key?
I'm sorry, Neela. I didn't quite ask the question correctly. Not so much the impact of this president, but of a president opining publicly on interest rates.
Right. I got that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, occasionally we do see presidents opine on Fed policy. What's important, though, is that the Fed always remain independent, that they set the policy based on what they're seeing in the economy, not just now, but in the future. The economy is doing good now by Chair Powell's own admission. The concerns are in the future, especially as related to the U.S.-China trade conflict. And so that's what the Fed always has to keep their eye on. There are two mandates, price stability and full employment. Presidential opining should not play a role in setting that policy.
I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A. Professor Beshadesh, do you think that there's a difference between what the Fed considers a good economy and what the average American would consider a good economy? For example, we mentioned earlier that gap between how many people are working and how much people are making, that middle class wages are still pretty stagnant. Do you get the sense that the Fed and the American people do or don't see eye to eye on what an ideal economy would be like?
They probably don't see eye to eye. And that just has to do with how anytime an economy grows, so what matters how that growth is distributed across the economy and across individuals. And if you have, you know, for example, if the growth is distributed to more benefit the upper echelon of the income distribution, then the bottom part is not going to have a very different perception of how the economy is doing. And vice versa, if the bottom is doing better than the top, then you start getting different perceptions. And the Fed sort of has to take everything in account and think about the economy as a whole. Whereas individuals, when we think about the economy, we sort of think about what's happening to our income, what's happening to our ability to buy things, to go on vacation, to do a variety of activities, and what's happening to our friends and family and our neighbors. Right. And so our sort of scope and view of activities is much more limited than what the Fed has to take into account.
So what do you think, Professor, what message do you think it would send if, indeed, as many analysts expect, the Fed does lower interest rates? Do you expect people to presume that it's used to, you know, avert crisis, that it's a sign that crisis is coming? I mean, perception is going to play into people's economic behavior insofar as they pay attention to the Fed. What do you expect the initial reaction to be?
So I think it depends on the size of the cut. If you just get 25 basis points or a quarter of a percentage, then I don't think there's going to be much of a reaction. If you get anything bigger, I think it can only be half a point, if not a quarter, then you might get more of a thinking that maybe things are not sort of as good as they appear on the surface.
Great question from a listener, one that definitely has affected me for a really long time and finally does not anymore. Thank you, Jesus. Neela, a listener, tweeted, how about student loan interest rates? In spite of the interest rate going down, mine and everyone else's student loan interest rates keep going up. Can you talk about that?
Right. So this is because they're either fixed or they adjust. So the Fed policy doesn't affect everything in lockstep. There are a lot of other factors. And what's important to keep in mind in terms of price increases is, yes, inflation is low, but there are three things that Americans spend a lot of money on that's only been going up over the last 10 years. That's healthcare, housing, in education. And while you've seen lower rates help in certain parts of the economy, those three aspects are still a struggle for a lot of middle-class families. We haven't seen, even though housing mortgage rates are down a full percentage point, we haven't seen that pickup in people buying homes that you would expect with rates so low. And again, we haven't seen the effect in terms of student loans that you would expect with rates so low. And so this is why there's this disconnect that we talked about earlier between how macro strategists think about the economy and maybe the Fed and the markets and how real people are feeling the economy when it comes to these large purchases.
One last question, Neela, before we let you go, and this just has to do with the context in which we take all of these economic factors. One listener tweeted, isn't the ballooning debt resulting from the Trump tax cuts a bad thing, especially when a recession comes? Before we let you go, Neela, where does this interest rate fit in the context of all these other things? Tax cuts and interest rates and tariff wars, and how do we keep all of this straight in our heads?
Well, that's a question to end on. it's a, you know, the interest rate is a part of that because it does go back to the financing costs that the federal government has to repay all this debt. It sets the rate for the bond market, and so it's a very important factor. But, you know, all of this works together to shape the economy. What we're seeing now is that that $1.5 trillion in tax cuts last year had a big effect on the economy for two quarters, and we're now seeing that effect wane. But what's left behind is escalating debt, a $1 trillion deficit, as far as the eye can see in terms of the government's own estimate. And so that is something that will have to be reckoned with. Mm-hmm. It's better to reckon with it in a low interest rate environment than when interest rates eventually pick up and now we have higher financing costs on a bigger amount of federal debt. So that's a whole nother discussion, but it's definitely waiting in the wings for us as we consider the strength of the economy.
Neela Richardson, investment strategist at Edward Jones. Neela, thanks for talking to us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And Tibor Beshadesh, associate professor of economics at Georgia Tech. Professor, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you for listening. This is 1A.